Chapter 5. That my present knowledge will appear to me but as childish ignorance. I must save money, and I will, and one of those colleges shall open its doors to me, shall welcome whom now it would spurn, if I wait 20 years for the welcome. I'll be D.D. before I have done. And then he continued to dream, and thought he might become even a bishop by leading a pure, energetic, wise, Christian life. And what an example he would set! If his income were £5,000 a year, he would give away £4,500 in one form and another, and live sumptuously for him on the remainder. Well, on second thoughts, a bishop was absurd. He would draw the line at an archdeacon. Perhaps a man could be as good, and as learned, and as useful in the capacity of archdeacon as in that of bishop. Yet he thought of the bishop again. Meanwhile I will read, as soon as I am settled in Christminster, the books I have not been able to get hold of here. Livy, Tacitus, Herodotus, Aeschylus, Sophocles, Aristophanes, ha, ha, ha. Hoity-toity. The sounds were expressed in light voices on the other side of the hedge, but he did not notice them. His thoughts went on. Euripides, Plato, Aristotle, Lucretius, Epictetus, Seneca, Antoninus. Then I must master other things. The fathers thoroughly, Bede and ecclesiastical history generally, a smattering of Hebrew I only know the letters as yet, hoity-toity. But I can work hard. I have staying power in abundance, thank God, and it is that which tells. Yes, Christminster shall be my alma mater, and I'll be her beloved son, in whom she shall be well pleased. In his deep concentration on these transactions of the future, Jude's walk had slackened, and he was now standing quite still, looking at the ground, as though the future were thrown thereon by a magic lantern. On a sudden something smacked him sharply in the ear, and he became aware that a soft cold substance had been flung at him, and had fallen at his feet. A glance told him what it was: a piece of flesh, the characteristic part of a barrow pig, which the countrymen used for greasing their boots, as it was useless for any other purpose. Pigs were rather plentiful hereabout, being bred and fattened in large numbers in certain parts of North Wessex. On the other side of the hedge was a stream, whence, as he now for the first time realized, had come the slight sounds of voices and laughter that had mingled with his dreams. He mounted the bank and looked over the fence. On the further side of the stream stood a small homestead, having a garden and pigsties attached. In front of it, beside the brook, three young women were kneeling, with buckets and platters beside them containing heaps of pigs' chitterlings, which they were washing in the running water. One or two pairs of eyes slyly glanced up, and perceiving that his attention had at last been attracted, and that he was watching them, they braced themselves for inspection by putting their mouths demurely into shape and recommencing their rinsing operations with assiduity. "Thank you," said Jude severely. "I didn't throw it, I tell you," asserted one girl to her neighbor, as if unconscious of the young man's presence. "Nor I," the second answered. "Oh, Annie, how can you?" said the third. "If I had thrown anything at all, it shouldn't have been that. Pooh! I don't care for him." And they laughed and continued their work, without looking up, still ostentatiously accusing each other. Jude grew sarcastic as he wiped his face, and caught their remarks. "You didn't do it, oh no," he said to the upstream one of the three. She whom he addressed was a fine dark-eyed girl, not exactly handsome, but capable of passing as such at a little distance, despite some coarseness of skin and fiber. She had a round and prominent bosom, full lips, perfect teeth, and the rich complexion of a cochin hen's egg. She was a complete and substantial female animal, no more, no less, and Jude was almost certain that to her was attributable the enterprise of attracting his attention from dreams of the humaner letters to what was simmering in the minds around him. "That he will never be told," said she deedily. "Whoever did it was wasteful of other people's property. Oh, that's nothing. But you want to speak to me, I suppose? Oh yes, if you like to. Shall I clamber across, or will you come to the plank above here? Perhaps she foresaw an opportunity, for somehow or other the eyes of the brown girl rested in his own when he had said the words, and there was a momentary flash of intelligence, a dumb announcement of affinity and posse between herself and him, which, so far as Jude Folly was concerned, had no sort of premeditation in it. She saw that he had singled her out from the three, as a woman is singled out in such cases, for no reasoned purpose of further acquaintance, but in commonplace obedience to conjunctive orders from headquarters, unconsciously received by unfortunate men, when the last intention of their lives is to be occupied with the feminine. Springing to her feet, she said, "Bring back what is lying there." Jude was now aware that no message on any matter connected with her father's business had prompted her signal to him. He set down his basket of tools, picked up the scrap of offal, beat a pathway for himself with his stick, and got over the hedge. They walked in parallel lines, one on each bank of the stream, towards the small plank bridge. As the girl drew nearer to it, she gave without Jude perceiving it, an adroit little suck to the interior of each of her cheeks in succession, by which curious and original maneuver she brought, as by magic upon its smooth and rotund surface a perfect dimple, which she was able to retain there, as long as she continued to smile. This production of dimples at will was a not unknown operation, which many attempted, but only a few succeeded in accomplishing. They met in the middle of the plank, and Jude, tossing back her missile, seemed to expect her to explain why as he had audaciously stopped him by this novel artillery instead of by hailing him. But she, slyly looking in another direction, swayed herself backwards and forwards on her hand as it clutched the rail of the bridge, till, moved by amatory curiosity, she turned her eyes critically upon him. "You don't think I would shy things at you?" "Oh no. We are doing this for my father, who naturally doesn't want anything thrown away. He makes that in 2 dubbin. She nodded towards the fragment on the grass. "What made either of the others throw it, I wonder?" Jude asked, politely accepting her assertion, though he had very large doubts as to its truth. "Impudence. Don't tell folk it was I, mind." "How can I? I don't know your name." "Ah, no. Shall I tell it to you?"
"Do."
"Arabella Don. I'm living here. I must have known it, if I had often come this way. But I mostly go straight along the high road. My father is a pig breeder, and these girls are helping me wash the innards for black puddings and such like." They talked a little more and a little more, as they stood regarding each other, and leaning against the handrail of the bridge. The unvoiced call of woman to man, which was uttered very distinctly by Arabella's personality, held Jude to the spot against his intention, almost against his will, and in a way new to his experience. It is scarcely an exaggeration to say that till this moment Jude had never looked at a woman to consider her as such, but had vaguely regarded the sex as beings outside his life and purposes. He gazed from her eyes to her mouth, thence to her bosom, and to her full round naked arms, wet, mottled with the chill of the water, and firm as marble. "What a nice looking girl you are," he murmured, though the words had not been necessary to express his sense of her magnetism. "Ah, you should see me Sundays," she said piquantly. "I don't suppose I could," he answered, "that's for you to think on. There's nobody after me just now, though there may be in a week or two." As he had spoken this without a smile, and the dimples disappeared. Jude felt himself drifting strangely, but could not help it. "Will you let me?" "I don't mind." By this time as he had managed to get back one dimple, by turning her face aside for a moment, and repeating the odd little sucking operation before mentioned, Jude being still unconscious of more than a general impression of her appearance. "Next Sunday?" he hazarded. "Tomorrow, that is?"
"Yes."
"Shall I call?"
"Yes."
She brightened with a little glow of triumph, swept him almost tenderly with her eyes in turning, and retracing her steps down the brookside grass rejoined her companions. Jutefully shouldered his tool basket, and resumed his lonely way, filled with an ardor at which he mentally stood at gaze. He had just inhaled a single breath from a new atmosphere, which had evidently been hanging round him everywhere he went, for he knew not how long, but had somehow been divided from his actual breathing, as by a sheet of glass. The intentions as to reading, working, and learning, which he had so precisely formulated only a few minutes earlier, were suffering a curious collapse into a corner, he knew not how. "Well, it's only a bit of fun," he said to himself, faintly conscious that to common sense there was something lacking, and still more obviously something redundant in the nature of this girl who had drawn him to her, which made it necessary that he should assert mere sportiveness on his part as his reason in seeking her, something in her quite antipathetic to that side of him which had been occupied with literary study and the magnificent Christminster dream. It had been no Vestal who chose that missile for opening her attack on him. He saw this with his intellectual eye, just for a short, fleeting while, as by the light of a falling lamp one might momentarily see an inscription on a wall before being enshrouded in darkness. And then this passing discriminative power was withdrawn, and Jude was lost to all conditions of things in the advent of a fresh and wild pleasure, that of having found a new channel for emotional interest hitherto unsuspected, though it had lain close beside him. He was to meet this enkindling one of the other sex on the following Sunday. Meanwhile the girl had joined her companions, and she silently resumed her flicking and sousing of the chitterlings, in the Pellucid stream. "Catch done, my dear?" laconically asked the girl called Annie. "I don't know. I wish I had thrown something else than that," regretfully murmured Arabella. "Lord! He's nobody, though you might think so. He used to drive old Drusilla Folly's bread cart out at Marygreen, till he prenticed himself at Alfredston. Since then he's been very stuck up, and always reading. He wants to be a scholar, they say." "Oh, I don't care what he is, or anything about N, don't you think it, my child?" "Oh, don't he? You needn't try to deceive us. What did you stay talking to him for, if you didn't want done? Whether you do, or whether you don't, he's as simple as a child. I could see it as you courted on the bridge, when he looked at E, as if he had never seen a woman before in his born days. Well, he's to be had by any woman who can get him to care for her a bit, if she likes to set herself to catch him the right way." Via, the next day Jutefully was pausing in his bedroom with the sloping ceiling, looking at the books on the table, and then at the black mark on the plaster above them, made by the smoke of his lamp in past months. It was Sunday afternoon, 4:20 after his meeting with Arabella Dawn. During the whole bygone week he had been resolving to set this afternoon apart for a special purpose, the rereading of his Greek Testament, his new one, with better type than his old copy, following Griesbach's text as amended by numerous correctors, and with variarum readings in the margin. He was proud of the book, having obtained it by boldly writing to its London publisher, a thing he had never done before. He had anticipated much pleasure in this afternoon's reading, under the quiet roof of his great aunt's house as formerly, where he now slept only 2 nights a week. But a new thing, a great hitch, had happened yesterday in the gliding and noiseless current of his life, and he felt as a snake must feel who has slept off its winter skin, and cannot understand the brightness and sensitiveness of its new one. He would not go out to meet her, after all. He sat down, opened the book, and with his elbows firmly planted on the table, and his hands to his temples, began at the beginning. 3 Greek words? Had he promised to call for her? Surely he had. She would wait indoors, poor girl, and waste all her afternoon on account of him. There was a something in her too, which was very winning, apart from promises. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.